Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to remind parties that your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session, at which time you may press star one to ask a question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the meeting over to Tom Skinner. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, Rose, and thank you all for joining us today for this media availability with Dr. David Shay, S-H-A-Y, who's a medical officer in CDC's influenza division. Dr. Shay is going to open up with a brief statement regarding an article that's published in today's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report on estimates of deaths associated with seasonal influenza. He'll provide an opening statement, and then we will open it up for question and answer. Dr. Shay.
Thank you, and good morning. And I'm here today to share some updated information from my team here at CDC about influenza. As you all know, influenza has a significant health burden every year in the United States. It's associated with thousands of deaths, up to 200,000 hospitalizations annually, and hundreds of thousands of illnesses that require doctor's visits and miss days of school or work. But this report is only going to focus on influenza deaths. As you also know, quantifying the burden of influenza, particularly death, is challenging. To get at the burden of influenza, we have to rely on statistical models because many folks who die of influenza aren't ever tested for it, or they die of subsequent complications of an initial influenza infection like worsening heart disease or bacterial pneumonia. So we look at death certificates here at CDC that go into at least two categories, pneumonia and influenza and respiratory and cardiac, respiratory and circulatory causes. And we use, again, a statistical modeling approach to estimate how many of those deaths might be influenza associated. I think it's important to keep in context, which we don't really describe in this article because of space, that there's at least four factors that affect sort of flu mortality in any particular year. And those four would be the specific strain or influenza strains that are in circulation, sort of the length of the season or how long influenza is circulating in the United States, how many people get sick, because, of course, if more people get sick, there's more likely to be more serious outcomes, and finally, who gets sick, whether the influenza epidemic in a particular year is hitting younger or older people differentially, because as we know, most influenza deaths, a majority, 90%, occur in people age 65 and older. So what the report being issued in today's MMWR has done is really to just update previous estimates last made in 2009 using the same methodology, incorporating an additional 4 years of data. So this is an update that confirms really what we've seen previously in terms of flu. And the updated estimates encompass data from 31 seasons, from 1976-77 influenza season to the 2006-07 influenza season, which is the last date that we have death certificate data that we can look at. And that range is from about 3,000 deaths in the 1986-87 season to a maximum, if you will, of about 49,000 deaths that we saw in the 2003-04 season. So our major point today really is to point out the incredible variability of influenza seasons. Influenza is pretty unique in terms of vaccine-preventable diseases and sort of the wide range of outcomes that could happen in a particular season. So that's it for the opening statement, and we'd be happy to entertain questions.
Rose, we'll take questions now, please.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Press star 1 if you would like to ask a question. One moment for our first question. Our first question is from Daniel Danoon from WebMD. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Shay, I'm just confused by the two different ways of getting numbers. I understand that the lower bound number, can you talk about them, rather than me telling you what I understand, can you explain what the difference is between the lower and upper bound numbers? And I see that there's a caution here that we can't use just one number, but of course just one number is what people want. So can you help us understand what number we should be using when we talk about flu deaths in an average season, and when we look forward to a season such as the upcoming flu season? And what do we tell people?
Right. Thanks. That's an excellent question. Or excellent set of questions there. We have two categories that we look at, as you said. One is death certificates that have an underlying diagnosis of pneumonia or influenza. 99% of those deaths are actually coded as pneumonia. So that's to make an estimate of deaths in a particular season from pneumonia that are associated with flu. And typically, that's about 8.5% of deaths over the time period that we looked at. Now, we know that influenza causes more deaths than those just associated with pneumonia. However, that metric or that outcome measure has been used in the literature for over four decades, so that's one thing that we always look at so we have an idea how things are going over time. The broader category of respiratory and circulatory deaths, we think, encompasses the full picture of influenza-associated deaths, including things like people who might die because of a worsening chronic obstructive pulmonary disease after an influenza infection, or worsening congestive heart failure that results in death after an influenza infection. And we estimate that about 2% of that broader category in any typical year is associated with influenza. And your second question is, what is the one number we want you to use? We understand that that is a difficult communications message. I think, from my perspective, because we have this very wide range of deaths, from 3,000 to 49,000 in this three-decade time period that we looked at, it's relatively meaningless to say what happens in an average season, because when you look at sort of our data, there are very few of those 31 seasons where you would have an average outcome. So I think that's one of the reasons that CDC is trying to move towards away from a single number and rather give a range over a particular period of time to give a better context to what flu really means in terms of what it does to the community. And finally, we can't predict what's going to happen in any subsequent influenza season. I mean, that's, you can just look at the numbers and how they vary from season to season to come to that conclusion very rapidly.
Okay, next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Betsy McKay, Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Shea and Tom. Thanks. I didn't hear all of Dan's questions, so I hope I'm not asking the same exact question again. But, you know, very often we give this number, this estimate of 36,000 deaths annually from flu. So I'm wondering if you can just walk us through what that number constitutes, and does this new range replace it? Also, you did give an annual U.S. average overall of deaths from underlying respiratory and circulatory causes of 23,607. So is that an average number we can use, and does that compare to the 36,000?
Thanks. Excellent question. The 36,000 number that's often used pertains to a very specific time period from 1990 to 1999. And in that decade, where we had prominent circulation of H3N2 viruses, they were prominent in eight of the nine seasons that are contained within that the data that were used to make that estimate. And those are, as you know, typically more severe seasons. We had a high mortality for that nine-year period of 36,000. In that paper from which that 36,000 number came from, the overall mortality average for that time period was about 25,000. So this average that we're coming up with now of 23,600 is consistent with what we've published in the past. Our feeling is that it's very difficult to summarize flu with, as we gain more and more data, with a simple average. There are very few average seasons. You know, it's we have one in the 86 to 87 season that was only about 3,000 deaths, and then we have another one, you know, several years later that's about 50,000, almost 50,000 deaths. So a simple average, I think, fails to give the impact of flu in an understandable fashion. We could give a standard deviation or some other metric of the variance in our measures, but I don't think that would be helpful to the public. So that's why we have decided to try to focus more on the range rather than on a simple average. Does that answer your question?
saying is that, I mean, your advice would be that instead of saying the flu kills an estimated 36,000 people a year, which is what I and others often do say, that we should say, you know, flu kills between 3,000 and 49,000 or 3,300 and 49,000 people a year, or has over the past, you know, in seasons
over
the past 30 years.
Hey, and Betsy, this is Tom, and if Dr. Shea will correct me if I'm wrong, but as you report that range, I think it's important to note that there is such a wide range, and it depends on the various types of flu that are circulating. So I think that going a step further and saying that range is due to the fact that the number depends on, you know, the strains that may circulate would help explain it a little bit more.
Agreed.
Next question, Rose.
The next is from Julie Steenhuisen from Reuters. Your line is open.
Thank you. Yes, I'm just wondering if you can sort of, you know, looking forward, explain the role of better diagnostics, better methods of tracking, and what impact that might have. I mean, it looks like, you know, it may be, you know, even this range that you've given us is going to change quite a bit. Is that right? And you know, what are these numbers? How can these numbers be meaningful for us?
Well, let me start with your last question first, because I could use some clarification on that. What do you mean by how could the numbers be meaningful to you?
Well, it's just in terms of comparing year to year. I mean, we want
right.
to be able to give a number that you know, is a good reflection of what people can expect in a flu season. You know, I'm just wondering if you can sort of – I think we're all sort of struggling with how do we describe flu deaths, because it looks like it's a moving target almost.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely correct. Flu deaths are a moving target. Again, for vaccine-preventable diseases, there isn't another one that sort of has this range of variability, certainly in mortality, each season. So that's one of the important messages we want to get out, if you will. I think that another important point to make is that the numbers confirm that influenza has a substantial burden on mortality each year, but that mortality really can be quite variable. And then finally, around the question of better diagnostics, that's an excellent one. For an example, since 2004, pediatric influenza-associated deaths have been a nationally notifiable disease in the United States. That's the only category of deaths, or the only age group for which flu deaths are nationally notifiable. And as a result of probably better diagnostics and better surveillance, we have seen over the first few years of that system an increase in the number of reports that was probably due to a combination of better diagnostics and people looking for flu more actively in younger children who were critically ill.
Next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Lisa Schneering from SIDRAP News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for your availability today. I was wondering if when you looked at the numbers and your different modeling with this year's analysis, if you saw anything interesting to you or different that popped out when you looked at the age demographics and all of those issues.
No, not really. The numbers are very consistent. I mean, again, flu was associated in this time period as in other time periods and in other seasonal studies that have been done in other developed countries, with approximately 90% of the deaths being in those 65 years of age and older. One of the things I do think, though, that we're going to do in the future to put these numbers perhaps into better context is to also not only report numbers of deaths, but report years of life lost. Because, of course, an influenza-associated death in an 80-year-old has less impact on society and less impact on parents than an influenza-associated death in a 2-year-old. So that's sort of future work that we're going to plan on doing.
An 80-year-old?
Yeah.
80-year-old, you said 8-year-old.
Oh, I meant an 80-year-old. I'm sorry. Flu would have a less impact on society, flu death in an 80-year-old compared to a 2-year-old.
All right, next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Tom Mao from Los Angeles Times. Your line is open.
Two quick questions. First, is this the first time you've really broken down deaths by the strain of the flu virus? And second, how long do you have to go into a flu season before you recognize which is the predominant strain that's circulating?
Two great questions. No, this is not the first time that we've done that. The paper that we published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2003 was the first time we really broke deaths out by strain. And second is, that's a great question, and sort of how many weeks into the season will we know which is the predominant or the dominant strain? And again, unfortunately, the answer is that depends. In some seasons, for example, H3N2 will start off big and will be the predominant strain throughout a particular season. And other seasons we've seen, particularly recent seasons, 2006-07, where we had some influenza H1N1, some H3N2, and some B, and most of the B at the end of the season. So it would have been very difficult to say, except at the end of the season, sort of what proportion of each of the three strains was responsible for illness.
Next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Sabria Rice from CNN. Your line is open.
Well, thank you for taking our questions. For what you were just talking about, the differences between the influenza strains, the report says that deaths from influenza were 2.7 times higher for the H3N2. I guess what's the difference between that one and some of the other strains that are out there? Do we know which is out this season that should people be more concerned or less concerned? And I actually have two questions, and the second part is with the numbers varying so widely from 3,000 to 49,000, that might freak people out because you just have no idea. So what advice would you give to consumers?
Well, I think it comes back to one of our messages that we frequently give, that flu really is unpredictable. And, I mean, it's important to point out at the beginning of a season, we don't know what the impact of flu is going to be in a particular season. In terms of H3N2, what is it about the H3N2 viruses that causes more severe disease than, for example, H1N1 or B viruses? One of the factors may be that virus has a tendency to genetically change more quickly than the other two viruses. So it changes more rapidly, and therefore, even if you've been sick with it in the past, you're more likely, if it changes quicker, to get a subsequent influenza infection. So that may be one of the factors that's involved, but we don't understand all of them.
Next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Don Sapotkin from Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I'm still completely confused. I hope you'll bear with me. My understanding of what you're saying, you're trying to make, I think, essentially two points. One is that the range of numbers is important from year to year, much more important than an average. And you're also changing your estimates based on additional seasons. And so one question I have is, the old 36,000 number was always based on a range. It wasn't often reported, but I believe the range was 17,000 to 52,000. That's what was in that 2003 JAMA paper. So is that essentially the equivalent to the new range of 3,300 to 48,000? That's my first question.
Let me recap your points. I mean, I think your first point was that because of the variability of flu, we're trying to move away from an average giving a range of flu-associated mortality, and that's correct. Your second point is yes. For that time period of 1990 through 1999, the range of deaths there was what you just said, from approximately 17,000 to 50,000, with an average of 36,000 in that time period. But again, that was rather of an outlier of a decade, if you will, because of the predominant circulation of H3N2 viruses. So in that 2003 paper, we actually looked at quite a few seasons of data that ended in 1999. It was essentially 76 through 99. That had a broad range of estimates as well, not quite as broad as the range that we're reporting this time, but there was a broad range of flu mortality over the data that were included in that study as well. Does that help?
Sort of. But then where I get lost is when you're talking about 23,000 versus 25,000. In the old study, where did one of those, what was one of those numbers? So I'm trying to figure out what the,
right.
I know you don't want us to use a range, but I'm trying to figure out
an
average. But what does the 36,000 actually equate to in the new study, even though you don't want us to use it? I'm trying to understand
that. That was from I may not be understanding your question, so I'm sorry about that. That was for 1990 through 1999. That 2003 paper actually looked at a broader range of seasons from 76 through 1999. So from that whole time period, the average was approximately 25,000 deaths, excuse me. And for this time period, this broader 31-season time period that we're looking at, the average is approximately 23,600. So they're very similar.
Okay, Rose, we've got time for a few more questions.
Thank you. The next is from Joe Neal from NPR. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm really scratching my head here wondering what I'm going to use, because we really don't have a lot of time in broadcast to present a lot of numbers. And I think in a sense, to say that the range is 3,000 or 3,300 to 49,000 raises a lot of questions. And I think we don't have time to answer those questions in every report. And I also wonder if it's not a bit misleading to use 3,300 as the bottom number, since it's been 20 years since it was that low, and even in the last 20 years, the mortality has never been much below 12,000. So I'm wondering if you can help me out here, could I possibly just use the average of 23,000, which covers respiratory and circulatory causes? Wouldn't that be a fair number to use in a very condensed broadcast format?
Joe, this is Tom Skinner, and we certainly appreciate your desire to have one single number for an average, and we fully recognize how difficult it is on you all. I think at the end of the day, if you must use a single number, I would simply say that it's estimated that tens of thousands of people may die each year, in an average flu season, and leave it at that.
I would say that, I would get away from average flu season, because that's one of the points I think we're trying to make. But I agree with Tom that if we would say in many years, influenza associated with tens of thousands of deaths a year. I think that would be a very fair and a very quick way to summarize the data.
Joe, is that fair?
Well, I think that... I think some people might turn to these data and look at this table and say kills up to 48,000 a year, which is certainly accurate, but I also think that that can also be misleading, because in 2006
correct.
You only had 15,000. So.
Correct.
Yeah. I go back to what I said to Betsy McKay earlier in this call, is that whatever number you use, if you also include the caveat that the number depends on the strains of influenza that may be predominating, that's a little bit more information to help put your number into context.
And this is David again, and I would also add that when you do cite an average that you, I know time is precious, but give the seasons that average pertains to. Because, again, it can, as you just pointed out, it can vary so dramatically from time period to time period.
Yeah. Next question, Rose.
Thank you. The next is from Kathy Clark from Radio Pennsylvania State Network. Your line is open.
Thank you very much for taking my question. Is it fair to say, then, that if one of the strains expected to circulate in a given year is the H3N2, that given flu season has the potential to be a deadlier flu season?
We can't predict. It gets back to begin with, we can't predict if even, 2 weeks into the flu season, what's the predominant strain is going to be. It is very fair to say that, on average, H3N2 seasons are much more severe than H1 and B seasons. And again, 2.7 times more death associated with in this 31-year period when there was predominant or prominent prominent is a better word, prominent circulation of H3N2. And that's another one of our key messages, again, that we're trying to even though it's a complex message, that it really depends quite a bit on the strain of influenza that's in circulation.
Last question, Rose.
The last is from Catherine Hobson from Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, it's Katie Hobson with the Wall Street Journal Health Blog. I just have a quick question. On either of the pointy ends of these flu seasons, the low death rate in 86-87 and the high one in 2003-04, was it primarily the strain that caused that? I know you mentioned those four factors, but can you give kind of a snapshot of why the death rates were so low and high, respectively?
That's an excellent question, and I can't completely answer it because we don't know many of the factors that lead to these dramatic differences. It's certainly true that the specific strain in circulation is very important, and that H3N2, again, kills many more people than the other two circulating strains. It's also important, as I mentioned before, the length of the season can vary quite a bit, and a longer flu season obviously has a potential to result in more people getting sick, and how many people get sick directly influences the number of people who get serious complications who end up in the hospital and who die. And then finally, again, it's really important to think about who's getting sick in a particular year. H3N2 viruses tend to make older people more ill. And if a lot of old people are getting ill in a particular flu season, because 90% of the deaths occur in people 65 and above, the mortality for that season is going to be much higher than a season when few elderly people become ill with flu.
Okay. Thank you, Rose. This concludes our call. Thanks to all who joined us. And the report that we're referring to today, you should have received via email. It'll be posted on the CDC website as well. So thank you for joining us.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for joining. You may disconnect at this time.